Welcome back to A Place for Film, the official IU Cinema podcast. I am your co-host, Elizabeth Rell, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, David Michael Carter?
You know for a fact my middle name starts with an A.
I'm being a goofball. David Alexander.
Yes.
I don't know why I just felt like being like a weirdo.
I mean, we got a lot of energy. We did a rare thing where, hey, everybody, there's going to be a guest on this episode, and we recorded their segment before this part.
What?
So we already got energy going up in this piece. But yes, if anybody would like to know, from the ages of 5 years old to about, let's say 15, 16, I did think about going by Xander, but never had the strength or fortitude to say that out loud to a classroom full of children who would mercilessly make fun of me. So
that's so funny. Even at like 18, when you came to IU, you could have just rebranded and.
Yeah, but also the name Xander in 2008 would have been about 10 years too late to be going by. No one's named Xander anymore by 2008.
Like, Buffy's been over for a while.
Like, there isn't a new the last Triple X movie came out with a Xander in it in like 2001. But we are not here to talk about that. This is our episode on me and Elizabeth's experience to Film Alliance FilmX conference. This is our first time going to a conference.
The one good thing about virtual conferences is we can go.
Yes, we could actually attend and talk to people and do things, and all from the comfort of my bedroom. It was great. There was a day I'm pretty sure I did not wear pants while attending some of these. but we do have a very special guest on later in the episode that we'll cut to, Isan Che, my shiny new coworker at the BFCA, because I just started working there as a research assistant as well. But before we get to me and Elizabeth's thoughts on FilmX and Isan's thoughts on FilmX and panels in general, Elizabeth is going to present us with the upcoming schedule at the IU Cinema.
So since this episode is being released a few days later than normal, I will do the IU Cinema schedule from Wednesday, January 20th through Saturday, January 23rd. First up on Wednesday, starting on Wednesday, but available until February 3rd, we have A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. That is a 2014 Anneliese Amirpour feature directorial debut about an Iranian vampire. She actually visited in 2017. She visited the cinema with a then sneak preview of her film The Bad Batch. So the IU Cinema is pretty familiar with her and her work. This film is a part of the 10 Years, 10 Films, 10 Perspectives series, which is celebrating IU Cinema's 10th anniversary. They are free to watch for everyone, but you can only get credentials if you sign up to receive our weekly emails from the IU Cinema. So to do that, if you don't already receive those, you need to go to our website and the contact page and then subscribe to our newsletter. And that's how you can get signed up for those emails if you aren't already. So that's 10 films. Taste of Cherry has already happened at this point. And then Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. So there are 8 more after this. So you want to make sure to get signed up for those emails so that you can watch the films for free. Also this week on Thursday, January 21st, we have a virtual event. Is Elevator to the Gallows, which is continuing our City Light series that we've been on a little hiatus from, but now we're back. This film series is a collection of key masterworks of the 20th century, programmed by grad students in the media school, and these films are all picked from the David S. Bradley Film Collection, which is available in our very own Lilly Library. So it's a very specific series. And that is Louis Malle's debut feature, which helped kickstart the French New Wave in 1958. It's about a pair of lovers who conspire to kill the woman's husband. So that event is actually going to be a little different than what you've maybe come to expect from the fall semester at the IU Cinema. It is going to be a live introduction from the grad student Caleb Allison, who the cinema knows pretty well. And you're going to have free access to the film, but there will not be a Q&A for this one. So if the Q&As are the reason you don't attend, then you should be able to attend this one. It'll be a lot of fun. And that's all I have for this week. And that was the schedule.
Elizabeth was nice enough to say that she would start pre-recording the schedules. So we're going to see how that goes.
So if you don't hear David interjecting, that's why.
Yes, it's not that I'm disinterested in whatever's playing at the cinema. I just was not in the room when she recorded it. But let's get to our main topic, which was FilmX 2021. As I said earlier, this is our first time doing a film conference in any capacity. South by Southwest was our first time doing a film festival. So now we've gotten a slice. We've gotten that vertical slice of the film industry. I guess so. I guess this is like those are the two main components of a film industry.
Besides like the film itself.
Yes. Like neither of us have done a set visit yet, but don't count it out.
Maybe someday. They do have Pegasus.
I mean, yeah, I guess technically, I've done a set visit on accident because, I mean, I was in town when they were filming The Good Catholic. So
you just walked on the set?
I wasn't on the set, but I walked past the set.
Okay, I was like, man, they got really lax rules around there.
I think I did get asked if I wanted to be an extra, but I just had like a conflict. Mm-hmm. Like I couldn't do it.
Well, they filmed at a basketball game too, so like there's a good chance a lot of people are in it.
Yes. Maybe that should be our like 2022 goal, is to be an extra in a movie.
If Pegasus can go back to making movies, I feel like we'd have an in.
Yeah, I would love to be an extra. I'd love to be an extra. Also like to be one line guy. Yeah. There's like, because I can't act. So there's always three things I've always wanted to be in a movie. An extra, a person who's just got one random line. Like, oh yeah, I saw her go that way. Something that's like completely innocuous. Like, or I'd like to be killed horrifically.
Yes.
And I do or do not have dialogue, but I'd like to be like blown up or like chopped in half. Or like.
I think that's the goal. Like that seems like the most fun thing.
Yeah, because this is like either I'm like covered in blood or I get to do some like weird mocap. I don't know. It seems like a good time.
I'm picturing like the It's Always Sunny episode where they're extras in the horror movie or whatever it is. And Dee just keeps like moving around and saying words, but she's dead.
So FilmX is a film conference that usually takes place in Utah, where it's film exhibitors, distributors, some critics, just people kind of tangentially within the film industry, and like people who are work for film exhibitors like me and Elizabeth. I guess I am a film exhibitor, but I was on the behalf of IU this year, not Cicada. And it is just a sharing of ideas. It's people sitting together on panels talking about their experience. And this year, the highlight was obviously COVID-19 and how there's this seismic shift within film festivals and film exhibition in general. But also the sub theme, which was great, was about how these shifts can both benefit queer people, people of color who work within the industry, because the paths were so skewed this year. Like there wasn't this blockbuster versus indie debates really going on because everyone was on equal ground and like everyone was doing virtual screenings. Mm-hmm. The programming was able to be a little bit more diversified, like films that usually wouldn't have gotten play at film festivals because like things like the new Wes Anderson movie weren't going mm-hmm. to be playing. Like you would have to start looking up, you know, actually up and coming young filmmakers that you would usually ignore because you wouldn't have the space on your schedule. So I feel like that's what FilmX was about this mm-hmm. year. Yeah. Based on, we went to, I would say, a vast majority of the panels, like 90%. Easily.
We went to a lot.
Yeah. Like
basically anything we could get our hands on.
Yeah. I mean, when Brittany Friesner gave us the okay to go to whatever we want within the umbrella of taking place during the day, not just like meet and greets and happy hours, me and Elizabeth were like, yeah, why would we say no to that?
We're going to make the most of this since we can't usually go out west.
Yes. That's what FilmX is. So Elizabeth, I wanted to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
We went through a lot of panels. Obviously, mm-hmm. we can't go through each of the panels. I feel like I gave a decent job describing what was kind of the overall vibe of each panel. There were obviously panels that were more specific. Like there was like the PPE panel, which was about like when theaters are in operation, what is it going to look like and what it has looked like to like sanitize interact with customers. There were obviously things like
that. Yeah, I'm not going to bore you with those right now.
Yes. So we had a kind of lot of the same favorite panels, so I decided I would just let you take whichever ones you wanted, and I would fill in the blanks. So, Elizabeth, what was a panel of interest to you that you think the people listening who may not be interested in FilmX itself, but, you know, are interested in, like, the conversations around art house cinema and indie cinema right now?
Yeah. One that I really liked a lot that is actually very applicable to what, to like operations at a cinema or a festival, which is my job, it was Access Reframed, making media accessible. It was not like they had applicable things like these, like you should have audio description, you should have like hearing, like ASL or like quiet rooms for people. And like, we don't have a quiet room, but we have the lobby, which is always very quiet because it's just me sitting there. By myself, but it did a lot to point out why this is so important, because I think that ableism is definitely the thing that is not like the hot button topic, you know, like Black Lives Matter protests were happening all last year. Like that was something everyone was talking about, but ableism has never like reached that point. And as able-bodied people, we don't think about it that often. Like, well, oh, like, I guess blind people can, like, quote unquote, watch movies.
Yes.
But how do they do that, you know? And it's only when things are, like, available to them. And we have, at the cinema, we have, like, visually impaired, hearing impaired, all of these systems. But then once we get them, it's basically up to producers and distributors. Like, there are literally so many, most of our movies that come through the cinema don't have these files for us to even be able to use the equipment.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much, like, I knew about audio description as a thing, obviously, but it didn't occur to me that, like, that is something that is very much up to the people sending the movies to provide. Like, obviously, I don't expect anyone at the cinema to go into a recording booth and start trying to describe...
That would be two full-time jobs.
Yes, that would be, that would legitimately be a, they need benefits and healthcare for the amount of work they're about to put in. But it was like, it was very eye-opening to me, like for just the process of how limited it is. It was interesting, as we both kind of pointed out, that that was the one panel that decided to have someone doing American Sign Language. It had audio description in the background. Everyone was going out of their way to do descriptions of the rooms they were in. And with the exception of that last one, because there were some panels of people still doing descriptions of rooms they were in who had clearly gone to that panel, it was interesting that the other panels did not have audio description or ASL.
It was interesting.
It was interesting. I mean, this is a light criticism. I mean, we all...
Right, we're not putting them... Like, we're not roasting you.
Put on blast. I mean, we literally had a staff meeting... a production meeting where Seth, one of our projectionists, had pointed out that they had looked into different audio description things, and it is like, for the best version of that, it is very expensive. Like, it is a thing that is cost prohibitive. Now, it would be nice if it wasn't so cost prohibitive and there were a way to subsidize like those things that like people who want to be able to watch movies in some fashion or attend these events or whatever could just have access to, and it wouldn't put a super huge financial burden on something as small as a independent art house cinema. But yes, it was interesting that it wasn't present throughout the entire film festival. And just
I was
that
like,
one.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
But I thought that the you and I were both kind of commenting on it, because it's like, yeah, like you think like somebody has to make them whatever, but then also thinking about like the production value of these things, like. Captions is like very obvious. You obviously have to have someone speak the language, and if it's live, especially, like, be a fast typer, an accurate typer. But at one point, one of the panelists played a clip of the audio description from Black Panther, I spit my coffee out.
if I had the wherewithal to have remembered to go back to that panel when it was still recorded, and like, I want to be able to play the audio description for that, because it's so funny. And if I can't find the clip, literally what it is a very British man. Like, if you've ever seen 30 Rock, it's like when Michael Sheen played a character called Wesley Snipes, because he's the most British man on earth. And it's like that, and he's trying to describe Wakanda.
Oh my god.
And it was I like my jaw hit the ground, and I was actually in tears laughing, which I don't think I could communicate to Elizabeth via text. But it is an art form. Audio description is an art form because you have to have context. Obviously, you have to plan to be able to give descriptions between people speaking. You're trying to capture the mood of, like, you're not trying to break the mood of the film, which obviously this British audio description does break it. And they played a good one. They played one for Die Hard, and it was like actually very engaging. It was like listening to an audiobook. I mean, I think this should become a regular thing as someone who just wishes more people would watch movies, and I guess I should maybe say experience movies at this point, because not everyone can watch a movie. Like, I think it's a great idea. I think it should just be a standard. Also, it's one of those very easy things that I wish American people could just realize. Like, it affects able-bodied people's lives in no way. You don't have to be aware that there is audio description going on around you, so why not just have it? It doesn't affect your experience watching the movie, and it only helps out people. So that was a very good panel. We both enjoyed that one very much.
What about you, David?
I'll do like a mini thing. It was cool to do, meet people. I did make a couple of connections there. I did go to like a G Kids, meet the distributors thing. There was a funny meet and greet earlier in the week where it was like you went to a virtual bar and you got to sit at virtual tables. Oh, with
the town thing? Is that what it's called?
Yes. And I tried to go, and then like I saw what the setup was, and I was like, this is like a little awkward because like essentially it would be like walking into a cafeteria and just sitting at a table and being like, hi, my name's David. How are you?
Everyone at the festival seemed to love that thing though.
I know. I mean, it was one of those things that, like, I think if I had a friend go with me and experience it with me, I guess a lot like IRL, like, I would, it would have been a little more, I would have been a little more brave about it. But they did do one-on-ones.
Cool.
And I am an advocate for, like, trying to get more animated films played because animation is an art form. Like, that, like, it doesn't matter if it's meant for children or not meant for children. I think more animated films should just be played alongside, especially anime, which I'm also a big advocate of. So I did meet with G Kids, and that was a lot of fun. But the panel that I enjoy the most as someone who has aspirations of being a programmer more full time is the Rethinking and Programming Categories, which was a panel presented by women, people of color, and queer people. And it was about something I'm actually a big, not just to overuse the word again, advocate of, which is the way we advertise and classify movies within the art house world, I think is very off-putting to people who like movies, but you wouldn't necessarily call a cinephile. Like, I have many friends who love going to the IU Cinema or going to AMC, but movies are not the, like, focal point of their life. They just like watching a couple movies every week, and they try to keep up on whatever's new, and they try to watch good movies from the past. And the way that we... And, like, the IU Cinema is, I think, better at this than a lot of places because we try to do so many, like, themed series in some way. But we struggle with it. Like, the idea of calling something an international art house picture, which is one of my favorite series, for a normal person, that is gobbledygook. That doesn't mean anything.
What does that even mean?
Like, I guess you get the vague sense that it is a foreign film. But you're like, what is an art house? Like, why do I care that it's within this, like, category? It doesn't tell you anything about the actual genre of the film. It doesn't tell you anything about what the film is about. And then, like, kind of lumping them all in this, like, amorphous, like, category doesn't really do much for, like, an audience member who's, like, looking to take a chance on something new. And so it was a great panel of listening to people who had these, like, kind of, like, radical ideas of, like, you know, how do we advertise, like, these films to people who may not, without, like, whitewashing them in any way. Like, you know, you want people to know that it's a horror film, but you don't want to, like, downplay the fact that it's a horror film starring queer people. Like, those are, like, the things they were talking about. I found that super interesting, and I think it's something that, like, a lot of theaters and art houses and other venues should, like, kind of take stock of that. Like, yes, while there is this demographic of people, me included, like, I'm part of that demographic, that do just kind of know how an art house cinema works, and I do my own research before even watching a movie, regardless of whatever a program says anyway. I think it is important to, like, maybe start appealing to, like, the person who just wants to go and watch a movie that's relevant to their interest in saying something is internet. Like, to say Parasite, to lump Parasite in as, like, an international art house picture is kind of silly, because it doesn't tell you anything that Parasite is this movie about class, that it is very specifically Korean, that it is very specifically, like, a kind of a genre movie, like a home invasion movie, kind of. Like, it doesn't tell you anything about that. And also, just from, like, I would say, an outsider's point of view, it makes it kind of sound stuffy when you put that label on it.
Yeah. Art house is, to outsiders, sounds very exclusive.
Yes. And, like, art house cinema, as me and you know, and, like, a lot of people probably listening to this podcast know, is a very wide range of movies. Like, you know, an art house movie could include Parasite, but it could also include Gene Dielman. But yeah, that would say that was probably my favorite panel, but we kind of talk about it later. But I also did really enjoy the Letterboxd panel, which was about, like, the shape of cinema to come, turning point for film lovers is what it was called. And it was about the which, as we talk about later, just about how people's viewing habits were kind of monitored via Letterboxd for 2020, and, like, how big of a percentage drop there was from people watching new movies of the year from past years versus this year, where people kind of retreated back into just kind of catching up on older things. So,
yeah,
it was a lot of fun. And it had past IU Cinema guest Isabel Sandoval on the panel.
She's great. So lovely. I love her.
She was great. She's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So, yeah. And I didn't talk about it later, but she actually kind of gets into how this year, like, her film premiering right at the height of the pandemic, like, starting, like, she was talking about how that both, like, helped the film find exposure, and also, like, the weirdness of the usual festival circuit not being a thing for her this year, and, like, how odd that was, but while still, like, having this, like, notoriety for the year. So, so it is super interesting.
Oh, you didn't even mention the programming categories and barriers. I figured you'd mention, like, this big thing that you're such an advocate of,
which is
they, at one point someone said, and I quote, bad films are only harmful films.
Yes.
And
yes,
I was like, oh, this is, like, literally David's, like, life motto.
Yeah, bad films are only the ones that actually, like, harm people in some way. There's no, it's like, it's that old dumb joke about music where it's just like, what kind of music do you, like, it doesn't matter what genre music is, as long as it's good, I don't really care. Like, that is the way I feel about movies. And the only ones that, like, really, like, rub me the wrong way are the ones that actually could be harmful to somebody in some way. And I was like, it's like I was just tuned right into that. It was a great panel. Honestly, it's kind of a bummer that these are so exclusive to the people who attended the festival. I mean, maybe, who knows, maybe there could be plans to, like, do a highlights reel from them. I have no inside info on that. But, you know, since it was more open to the public, I would say if you're someone who is film adjacent, just has interest in these things, like, the fact that I have a feeling that having it online, I think things like this will probably remain online in some capacity. It could be a hybrid, but, like, I feel like maybe they found success in more people being able to attend in the exclusivity of having people fly out to Utah.
Oh yeah. So, when you would buy a, like, company ticket, it included numerous tickets in that one thing. So I'm sure.
Oh yeah,
many
for sure.
More people got to attend.
Yeah. But I am going to turn it over to us from the past.
Yeah.
So we can talk to our very special guest, Isan Che, about her experience at Filmix.
Isan, I'm currently a research assistant at the Black Film Center/Archive, and I work with the director, Terry Francis, and the rest of the team, essentially to do a lot of research and read through a lot of different queries and different projects. Like, we have a publication coming up with the Grunwald. And I'm just generally a very big film lover.
I was going to say, you're familiar with the IU cinema, right?
Yes, I love the IU cinema. I miss it very much.
So we actually had reached out to everyone who was attending FilmX this year. And Terry actually, well, because you're technically my coworker now, because I'm also a research assistant. Yeah. For the Black Film Center archive, but Terry put us in contact with you, said you'd be a great guest. But how did you get involved with FilmX, and what were you there to do in the first place? Like, what was your interest in going this year?
So essentially I went mostly as like a kind of like an audience participant, I guess. I'm not totally in the industry, but I feel like I really am making like my first foray, I guess, into the film world and also just like the arts world. But especially from my point of view, I really just wanted to know a lot about how people got into the industry and a lot of like, not the pressure points, but a lot of like the topics that were being discussed. Because I feel like as an outsider to film festivals, I've only been to like, I guess, regional or just like very off chance like film festivals. And the only other experience I have, I guess, is the Champs-Élysées Film Festival, which I like worked at sort of when I was interning. Yeah, so I was just curious about what it looked like from the inside, because this is all people who work in film festivals, in film. And I just wanted to like kind of compare what I read about and like what people actually talk about. I think it was at first a little bit overwhelming because, again, I don't know any of these people, but people are just being really candid and really honest. So actually it was like overwhelming at first, just from like kind of a newbie standpoint, but then it was pretty welcoming. I feel like everyone was really willing to have a conversation with each other and like try to help people as much as they can. It was different from a film festival, definitely, because it felt less like a hubbub kind of situation. Like, even though you are going from one Zoom room to the next, which was, I'm sure, like, a little bit of Zoom fatigue definitely came in. But it was weird because I feel like a lot of the people were also talking about this, a lot of the panelists. But especially when you're in a physical event, there's a lot of, like, energy that you spend that's not about the film festival or the film conference at all. It's about, like, how you're presenting yourself and how you're showing your brand or your marketing, or like there's a lot of formalities, which I can't say that I'm like for or against, but a lot of this conference was about like people are in their rooms trying to set up as much of an honest conversation as they can, and of course still being professional, but it was still very much like we're in such an unprecedented time, like let's try to figure this out as much as possible with the time that we have. I pretty much had free rein. Like, it wasn't, I know I had to like maybe pay attention to some of the new like social media ones, or I remember a couple of sessions that I took much more extensive notes, but it was mostly free rein. And I did try to like chat with people on Slack, and people were pretty accommodating. I think I got so much more than I initially anticipated, because it was a lot about inclusion and like trying to program a lot of different works, trying to hire a lot of different people, of course, of like POC, and like a lot of conversations around queer representation. That was really honestly like pretty hopeful for me to see as someone just like starting in the industry. And yeah, it felt like people kept saying like we don't want it to be like it was before. Like it can never go back to the way it was before. Like that's what people were saying a lot in like both inclusion and also about like the digital sphere and like how to have hybrid events. But I think my favorite two discussions that I just like was in the Zoom audience for was the Gina Duncan conversation. I think that was on Wednesday, and also the Friday opening conversation, which I think was a pre-recorded. It was pre-recorded, but it was Isabel Sandoval. Yeah, and
the president of Letterboxd or or like the social media manager or something. But what was the Gina conference about?
So it was Gina Duncan's conversation, and I'm pretty sure she was like the programmer, right? She's like a senior programmer, I think. But she was talking about her career, how she started at the Burns, and I had never heard of the Burns. I feel like people just kept referring it to it as the Burns, and I was like, I had to like Google search it while they were talking about it. But yeah, she was just talking about going into the industry and like starting her career as a programmer, and also trying to like really stay true to her vision of like showcasing films from people of color about Black and Brown people, and making sure that everyone in the audience was included in the programming. And I feel like she talked a lot about the one thing that she talked about, like in her most recent programming, I think was at BAM, and she had done a celebration of Toni Morrison's life, and she talked about how she programmed both private events and also the public programming, or like in conjunction with the public programming. And I thought that was such an interesting way of like, I don't know, maybe not breaking down barriers, but such a different way, at least for me, of thinking about film programming, because it was like inviting more of a personal connection to the art and to the community, and especially like making sure that those relationships are always like fueled and intact, which I feel like may already exist, especially for like I don't know, predominantly like white male critics or like those programmers, but especially like I feel like having private events where you're engaging with a community on a very different level, it's always pretty important. Yeah, and then she said something about like she has no fear about like people gathering again because people can't stop gathering, and that's why like the pandemic is still a thing. And the way that she put it was so like kind of beautiful, honestly. It was like, yeah, it's really true. Like it really, like, the reason why it keeps going on is because people really need other people. So I would love to hear what you got out of the Letterboxd conversation, and also your relation to Letterboxd, because I find it so intimidating, and I like follow maybe like two other people, like just my friends, and we're always like, I don't know if you can curse on here, but like posting kind of talking about films that we like, and I feel like it's a really cool way to engage with people, but it's also kind of like Twitter, like
it is a lot. It's really just an extension of film Twitter at this point, if I'm being completely honest about what Letterboxd actually is.
I wish I'd gotten that session went over on what its scheduled time was, mm-hmm. and it was recorded, it was like pre-recorded, so I was like, oh, like I'm hungry, it's time for lunch, I need to do that first, and I'll come back to it. And then the video was just gone the rest of the day yesterday. It's back up now, but I haven't had time to watch the rest, and I'm so annoyed. But what I saw was great.
The Letterboxd panel I found super interesting, only because it confirmed to me that if given just based on the trends that they talked about of people not watching 2020 movies, like going back and revisiting things that were older, and that was like the trend in 2020. It confirmed my belief that, like, if given the opportunity to not seek, like, I feel like people have a hard time seeking out new things. And it's very easy, even if it's something that's new to them, older things that are at your fingertips or you might own or have like an allure to them, since they're not an unknown, will actually like fall back into like those old habits. Because I was part of that demographic. Like, I have not done my usual like marathon of catching up on all the 2020 films, and like I exclusively just did marathons of older films from like I watched all of like the noir films from Japan from like the 60s over the course of like 3 weeks or something like that. It was like a great panel in that for me, just because I was like, that confirms film watchers' bias towards older things versus newer things, which is interesting.
Saying that kind of like, it also sort of confirms, because a lot of the, I mean, a lot of the films weren't released in theaters, but the ones that were, with the exception of like Trolls World Tour, which is like a family thing, but like even like the ones that were released just on digital, people aren't watching, which just kind of like means people would much rather go to a theater, which is hopeful.
You are correct. That's the other thing. I think people just want to watch, would rather just watch these movies in the theater, which is my
ditto thing.
Like watching, like, to bring up Letterboxd, and he's a Letterboxd favorite, like watching David Ehrlich's top 25 movies of 2020 just really hammered home to me that the reason I didn't seek out a lot of those movies, because I was like, I don't really want to like have to try to like make a facsimile of a movie theater in my home at this point. Like, it's just too exhausting to be like, I'm gonna turn off my phone and close my blinds and like try to concentrate on like, you know, a screen, even though the world is like falling apart around me. It's just not the same. Whereas like the magic of a movie theater is that it kind of forces your psyche into that state. It's like almost like hypnosis to a point. And so, like, watching that, like, top 25 video and, like, looking at people's Letterboxd, you know, Letterboxd, like, top 50 movies of the year, which were there 50 movies that came out this year, I guess, that was, that panel really, like, put that into sharp focus for me. With that, we didn't want to take up much of your time. Thank you for being on. We're going to have you back on for, like, a more proper guest episode. We didn't know if we would get like 20 responses to that email or just one, but thank you so much
For
being on. It's been a pleasure. Is there anything you'd like to plug before you go?
Anything you I'd like to plug?
You can plug your Letterbox.
Yes. That's actually exactly what I was going to do. I need to find more reviews from people I actually know and not just like Twitter critics. So I'm opening up my app. The handle is Junior Mint, because that is my, if I ever get a movie theater snack, that is usually what I get.
Thank you so much, Isan. It's been lovely having you. We will have you back on soon. Let's put it that way.
All right. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us on A Place for Film this week. Elizabeth, do you have any final thoughts? Here's what I'll say. Final thoughts. Would you go back? Would you do something like this again? My answer is just a very solid yes.
Yeah, most definitely. Like I said, I really milked it. I was like, I'm going to get everything out of this I can while I have the opportunity.
Yes.
And I think I learned a lot, and kind of also, like, some of the things that we've been talking about, the cinema, it's kind of validated those things and those concerns, etc. Which, in a time that we are currently in and where everything feels like, especially work, feels 10 times like heavier, that was a really nice and refreshing thing to experience.
Yeah, it was also just nice that it wasn't that there were so many people of color and so many queer people there. Like, it didn't feel I didn't feel as alienated as I would usually feel at things like this. Yeah. There were nice that there were people who actually had like personalities and character and decided to like make like have like a fun time with the, you know, like given the thing. Because a lot of it was just conversations. I was actually, which I would appreciate more of, which it, once again is just a light criticism. Like it was a lot of conversations amongst peers as opposed to someone presenting hard data and anecdotal things, which when you're watching on a computer, you actually kind of prefer after you sat through 5 hours of Zooms of people just having conversations about things. So I hope in the future there are, to break up that, there are a few more like, this is the data we got from changing
our programming. Oh my gosh, the data one was just all of that.
It was just that, and it was presented by a woman with a delightful British accent, so it was like ASMR. It's like, even if the things I wasn't, like, I wasn't comprehending that she was talking about, I was still very relaxed and calm watching it. So, it was a good time. Elizabeth, where can people find you?
Find me anywhere people are found. Letterboxd, Twitter, Instagram.
Find Elizabeth on the like the International Space Station, because you can find people there.
There are people I'm a part there. Of Space Force now. Yeah. Just surprising everyone. I mean, like social media wise, sir. Yes. But it's just at my name.
You can find me on Letterboxd at Robert Dolphy. You can find me on Twitter at Samurai Flicks. You can find me on Instagram at Robert Dolphy. I think my Reddit, which I mostly just use to haunt the blank check and like music and comic book Reddits, is Robert_Dolphy. I'm not positive about that. I would need to pull it up. So I just post on blank check forums a lot. I don't really do much on there. Thank you so much for joining us. Stick with us as we tweak and perfect this format. This is a lot of fun. We will have Isan back on in the future, as I said earlier. She has already staked claim to a very juicy...
you can guess which one it is.
It's like the, it's probably the juiciest program at the IU Cinema this semester. Man. So look forward to that. But yeah, that's going to do it for us on A Place for Film. We'll see you at the movies. Good night.
Good night.